I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. One day after accepting her historic nomination, Democrat Hillary Clinton kicked off her general election campaign with a rally today at Temple University. WHYY's Katie Culinary reports.
Clinton began by thanking Philadelphia for hosting the Democratic National Convention.
You know a little something about history and about making history. And I am so grateful to everyone in this city who pulled such a great convention together, who were so gracious, welcoming, and hospitable.
The rally drew a friendly crowd of about 5,000 supporters and was the kickoff to a bus tour through Pennsylvania and Ohio, where Clinton and her running mate Tim Kaine will be trying to win over working class and other voters who aren't in her corner yet. Republican nominee Donald Trump has already been campaigning in Pennsylvania this week. In Philadelphia, Kaine debuted a line that's likely to be repeated through the general election, referencing Trump's reality TV catchphrase.
When it comes to the economy, we're at a college. We're at a college. Can I ask you a question? And Hillary, we got a you're hired president. Would you rather have that or a you're fired president?
That's the question they'll be putting to voters on their tour of battleground states. After this week's convention, Clinton supporter Kayla Brochue is hopeful that message will resonate with the skeptics.
Now I am just even more in awe of her, and I'm so much more optimistic that people will give her a better chance. You know, and really start to say, this is not somebody who's out for herself.
Getting voters in Rust Belt communities to feel the same way will be Clinton's next challenge. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
As Democratic delegates say goodbye to Philadelphia, city planners are still assessing the economic impact of the four-day Democratic National Convention. But the mayor and police commissioner say they're pleased that the event was peaceful and that visitors seem to enjoy the city. WHYY's Bobby Allen reports.
Lots of delegates Mayor Jim Kenney spoke with traveled beyond hotels and the Wells Fargo Center and into some of the city's neighborhoods.
But I do know, in addition to Center City restaurants, people were telling me how fun they had in South Philly, fun they had in West Philly. I mean, people were having in Northern Liberties, in Fishtown. I mean, they were getting around different neighborhoods other than just downtown.
As speakers addressed delegates in the arena, protests filled the streets, about 60 of them, with around 13,000 demonstrators, Commissioner Richard Ross said. Only 11 were charged for breaching a Secret Service fence, and more than 100 were cited for civil offenses like disorderly conduct. A dozen officers were injured, but it was mostly from heat exhaustion.
They worked very long, long hours in some very difficult circumstances, primarily the heat. I mean, that heat was excessive on at least a couple of those days, but they did an absolutely remarkable job, made us all proud.
Asked whether the temporary ban on parking in the middle of South Broad would stay, as some residents have asked, here was the mayor's response.
Well, I'm a South Philadelphia native, so yeah.
For now, that means no. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Voters go to the polls in 102 days. That's a fact. Between now and then, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will appeal to voters with a mix of facts and less than facts. Joining me to test truthiness along the presidential campaign trail is Eugene Kiley, director of factcheck.org. Eugene, thanks for joining us again on NewsWorks Tonight.
No problem. Love to.
Eugene, let's first focus on those largely but not exclusively scripted and highly choreographed conventions. The Democrats just had their say.
Two things about that struck me is, one, that it was highly scripted, as you said. And when they stick to the scripts, they're pretty good about sticking to the facts. You see, things have been scrubbed pretty well. When they go off script, they get themselves into trouble, as Jesse Jackson did. For example, he said on trade that we have a larger trade with Mexico than we do with China and Japan. Well, that was false. China is the biggest trading partner. And did the same thing with jobs, saying that there were not a single month under the Obama administration where they lost jobs, and that was not true either.
Much of the focus is on the economy. That seems to be the top concern of voters. And Hillary Clinton said that 15 million private sector jobs have been created since President Obama took office. That's not quite true either.
No, it's not. You know, and she was in a tough spot because she was doing two kind of contradictory things. She's promoting Obama's success while also recognizing that the U.S. economy hasn't fully helped everyone. In this case, she's making the case of 15 million jobs, as you said, private sector jobs being created since Obama took office. The number is actually 10.5 million jobs, and she's excluding the public sector jobs. And there was a decline in public sector jobs over this period of time.
Now, I just heard you use the term pretty good when describing Reverend Jesse Jackson's assertions. How do you give an overall grade to the, in this case, Democratic Convention?
Well, in both cases, I think it was well-scripted and to be expected. What happens in these situations is they have a narrative that they wanted to tell. And on the Democratic side, you know, that narrative was we're on the right road, we're doing better, but we still need to continue the progress that we've made, and Donald Trump's dangerous. So what we saw were some facts that were distorted in both of those contexts, where they were taking things that Donald Trump had said and distorting them, taking them out of context.
Now let's go back a week to Cleveland.
Their narrative was everything is terrible. You know, the crime is bad, terrorism is bad. There obviously is some truth in that, but what we do here is put things in context. For example, he talked about crime, saying that it's up 17% in 50 of the major cities in 2015 compared to 2014. And that's absolutely right. But we talk to criminologists who tell us you can't make any definitive claims here. There's no trends yet.
And apparently you've been at this for at least five national political seasons. How does this compare with other contests, say, going back to 2000, Gore Bush?
This was a unique year for a whole bunch of reasons. One is that you got an open seat. So you have contested primaries on both sides. Now you have two nominees, one who has no experience running for public office in Donald Trump. So he runs on sometimes and makes some significant wild exaggerations in doing so. When he sticks on his script, he's a little bit better. And on the other side, you have Hillary Clinton, who's been in office or in the public view for decades. So there's a long record there, and Trump has been digging into that. So you have two candidates with high negatives, had rough primaries, and I think it's created a lot more work for fact checkers.
And by extension, a lot more work for the discerning voter?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, and what we've seen is that our traffic on our website has spiked significantly. We had a record in 2015 compared to 2012 when it was an election year.
What's the thrust of your work between now and November?
Well, it's going to be focusing probably more now on, well, two things. One, TV ads, because that's when they're going to start. And in earnest, they'll start after Labor Day. Secondly, the debates. There'll be three debates. They're going to be huge, to borrow a term. And so we'll be all over those.
Eugene Kiley, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
Eugene Kiley, director of FactCheck.org. And one more fact. The 2016 Democratic National Convention was the most inclusive to date.
There truly is this sense of community here, that we are able to interact with people who come from so many different backgrounds, so many immigrants that were able to come to the U.S. and build a better life for themselves.
We'll take a look at the diversity of the delegates as NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. If most liked is a predictor of political success, we can dispense with the balloting and crown the election winner. Bestowing that honor is Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Drum roll, the winner is
Michelle Obama, the first lady, has the most positive image of any of the major speakers there. 58% of Americans say they have a favorable opinion of the first lady. That's more than Bernie Sanders, who comes in second, more than Barack Obama, her husband, who comes in at 51% favorable, more than Bill Clinton, the potential first spouse, who's at 49%, and more than Vice President Biden, who's just below Bill Clinton. And, of course, I should say, Dave, that Hillary Clinton, of course, who made the dramatic acceptance speech last night, as did Donald Trump a week ago Thursday, has much lower favorable ratings because she's in the middle of a campaign, and in that kind of context, it's very hard to maintain a high favorable rating.
Lower or lowest for Trump and Clinton relative to other presidential wannabes?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. We've pointed out, and many other people have pointed out, that in general, they have the highest combination of unfavorable ratings of any candidates that we've been able to track. There were spots, back in 1992 when Ross Perot had an unfavorable up in the 60% range, and there was a spot back in 1992 when the incumbent President George H.W. Bush had an unfavorable rating up in the 60% range, but never have we had the two major party candidates with unfavorable ratings up right now in the high 50% range.
Too soon to tell post-convention how well they've done a job of managing their images?
Long term, of course, yes. We need to wait and see how the dust settled over the next week or two. We did notice that Trump gained during his convention. There was a milestone, Dave, that was reached earlier this week when one night in our aggregated interviewing, Trump's image was exactly the same as Hillary Clinton's, at 38% favorable for both of them, 57% unfavorable for both of them.
Now, which direction was that? Did he rise or sink to her level?
A combination of both. He rose and she sank a little. So that's how they got equal. And the reason I'm saying that is because for an entire year now that we've been tracking their images among the American public, Hillary Clinton has had a more positive image than Donald Trump. Now, we've been monitoring it the last several nights, including last night, Thursday night, and Hillary Clinton's image is looking better over the last couple of nights. She's getting an image bounce, so to speak, and Trump's image is getting worse. So she's now pulled out ahead, at least in terms of her favorables. But again, as I said a minute ago, let's wait and see in a couple of weeks where all of this is once the dust settles.
Donald Trump did not wait for the dust to settle on the campaign. He kept sending out tweets and texts during it. Did it have the effect of mitigating the message of the DNC?
Well, it certainly had the effect of keeping him in the news. And that's, I think, what historians who look back at this race will say that he was a master of, keeping himself in the news. We've been monitoring night by night Americans telling us whether they've read, seen, or heard anything about Hillary Clinton and anything about Donald Trump in the last day or two. And we did notice last week during the Republican convention in Cleveland, Donald Trump was way outpacing Hillary Clinton. He was getting the attention and she wasn't. But this week, and this is important, during the Democratic convention here in Philadelphia, Hillary Clinton certainly jumped back up again. She was a lot in the news, but lo and behold, Donald Trump came right up behind her and for a couple of nights matched her in terms of Americans saying they'd also heard something about Trump.
Networks are next salivating over the potential audience for the Trump-Clinton debates. Less so, I imagine, for the Pence-Kane matchup.
That's true. We ask about both Mike Pence the weekend after Trump tabbed him as his nominee, and we also ask about Tim Kaine just after Hillary Clinton said he was to be her vice presidential nominee, and lo and behold, they're both obscure figures and kind of lay an egg in terms of what the American public responds, how the American public responds to them. We ask several different questions that we've asked historically, and they're actually at the low end in terms of Americans even knowing who they are. They're pretty obscure. And we also ask this question, do they make you more likely or less likely to want to vote for the presidential nominee with whom they are running? And 70-something percent of Americans say no difference for both of them. So we don't find any evidence yet that either Pence or Kaine is making much difference.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. The 2016 Democratic National Convention was historic, and not just for the party's nomination of Hillary Clinton. The delegation was one of the most diverse in history, as WHYY's J. Scott Smith reports.
When it came time for the Iowa delegates to cast their votes on Tuesday evening, the first voice the country heard was barely old enough to vote.
My name is Sruthi Polyneapin, and I am from Iowa, a state of female firsts.
Polyneapin is a first-generation American whose parents immigrated from India in 1992. She will start at Harvard this fall and, at 18, was one of the convention's youngest delegates.
There truly is this sense of community here, that we are able to interact with people who come from so many different backgrounds, so many immigrants that were able to come to the U.S. and build a better life for themselves.
Polyneapin and other delegates of varying ethnicities, races, and gender identities made the DNC the most diverse ever. While the Republican convention notably had just 18 African-American delegates, the DNC had nearly 1,200. The Democrats also had 633 LGBTQ-identified delegates, including Pennsylvania's Sharon Cooks.
A lot of the legislators here that I've worked very closely with reached out to me and decided that I would be a really great representation for trans women of color and the LGBT community here in Philadelphia.
Cooks, who is African-American, has long been an advocate for trans women of color in in Philadelphia. She says that her support of the Democratic Party is based in its openness and acceptance of the LGBTQ community.
They're realizing and being more sensitive and compassionate to the young people that are coming up. We're just regular human beings that want quality of life, that want to have employment, non-discrimination. Well, we do have them locally here in Philadelphia, but locally in other cities, statewide protections as well as federal protections.
As the general election begins in earnest, party leaders are hoping this diversity could be the difference in electing Hillary Clinton. I'm J. Scott Smith for WHYY News.
Cities have plenty of urban development projects on the to-do list, from grant applications to sprucing up Main Street. But many Pennsylvania municipalities are short on manpower and financial resources. A group of Penn State students, eager for real-world experience, spent their summer correcting that mismatch. Keystone Crossroads' Eleanor Klibanoff reports.
Across the street, next to the Texas, we have the Willits copiers.
Duncan Ackerman, a Penn State senior majoring in community and economic development, has spent his whole summer getting to know the store owners in downtown Lock Haven.
We have Nerd Haven. We have a vacant storefront. Then we have Vape Haven.
Distracting as comic books and e-cigarettes may be, it's the empty storefront that catches Ackerman's eye. He, along with two other students, are assembling a list of all the vacant building space in the Central Business District. They're part of the new Scholarship Sustainability and Civic Engagement Program at Penn State. This year, 11 students piloted the program, which includes two semesters of classwork and summer fieldwork. Director Tim Kelsey says the program starts with a semester of orientation.
We introduce the students to the community they'll be working in the summer. We provide them some background training and basic community skills. In the summer, they're in the communities working with those partners on the project of local need. And then in the fall, they're back here in University Park and essentially reflecting on their experiences.
The students are spread across the state for the summer, from Philadelphia all the way to the city of Newcastle on the Ohio border. And the projects are all different, too. Some groups are working on food access issues, while others apply for tourism grants or document blighted property. Kelsey calls the summer field work an internship on steroids. Students are expected to work independently and produce professional-level results by the end of the summer.
Our emphasis is equally student experience, but also working on projects defined by the communities that help the communities deal with issues that they're concerned about.
In Lock Haven, that's vacant space. Natasha Gorham, executive director of downtown Lock Haven, said the town has a lot of hidden vacancies, like second-floor apartments or unused office space. It's hard to attract new businesses when you don't know what space is available to offer them.
We've been talking about an inventory for a long time, but this organization only has one full-time staff member, which is myself, and one part-time. So trying to find time to do that along with everything else has been difficult.
The program makes a 3-year commitment to the cities, so a new set of students will work in the community next year and another group after that.
That's kind of the one thing that really sold it for me, is that this is more long-term than just we're here for 8 weeks and then we'll leave.
Because as anyone who works in community development knows, progress can happen very, very slowly. That's one of the lessons the students learned the hard way this summer, along with a lot of real-world skills to back up their academic training. There were some false starts, frustrations, and a learning curve, but Gorham says that's to be expected from any new employee.
I was here for their first phone call about setting up the meeting, and I mean, I'm younger myself, so I understand that they were nervous about it, but they were so excited about it. So as long as you come in and you're going to be open-minded, I think you'll do great.
For Duncan Ackerman, that first day excitement hasn't flagged as the project nears completion. He's over any jitters and now is looking to the future.
If anything, it showed me how much more work needs to be done in small communities across America.
Eleanor Klibanoff, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY serves as the lead station. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.